Every once in a while, I meet a person who radiates joy. Those are the opening words to commentator David Brooks's latest book, The Second Mountain, The Quest for a Moral Life. Brooks writes that most people encounter two mountains during their lives. We begin climbing our first mountain when we begin adulthood. To get to the top, we work hard and embrace what will help us climb: power at work and power at home. When we get to the top, we hope to find happiness that comes from material wealth and success in the eyes of other people. And after some time, we recognize that though we're at the top, we aren't really happy after all. At this point, we find ourselves in an existential crisis. We are going through a difficult time, and we find we have no real friends to turn to, no moral depth, no purpose, nothing about which we care deeply. We've descended into a valley. As Psalm 23 says, we walk in the valley of the shadow of death. And then, if we're lucky, we look up and notice a second mountain. We begin climbing up, heading toward a place of meaning. To help us with the climb, we embrace authenticity, forge relationships that are built on sacrifice, and put all that we have into doing something worthwhile. At the top of the second mountain, we find more than happiness. We find joy. Brooks explains the difference between the mountains. If the first mountain is elitist, moving up, the second mountain is egalitarian, planting yourself amid those in need and walking arm in arm with them. At Pleasant Hill Presbyterian Church, we together as one body are climbing that second mountain. We encourage vulnerability here so we can embrace authenticity. We practice radical hospitality so we may forge relationships that are built on sacrifice. We put all that we have into following Christ. We climb not to please a demanding God, but because of the joy God offers us as we do the work of climbing. In our mid-20s, my husband and I joined another couple for vacation. We stayed at our friend's family home on Cape Cod. It was for a long weekend. It was great fun that first day. The weather was beautiful, the seafood was fresh, and we were having a ball with our friends. The second evening, after dinner at home, those of us in the younger generation went into town to meet some friends. We rolled back fairly late, and our group decided that we had to have some scrambled eggs and bacon before we went to bed. We did not do this quietly. We were laughing and cooking in the kitchen, not really concerned about waking the parents who were sleeping all the way on the other side of the house. We thought we were keeping the noise at a respectable level. We were wrong. Eventually, the giant, blustery, barrel-chested, ex-NFL playing father of the house came to the top of the stairs in his boxers and his robe and roared down at us. "I'm coming down there, and when I do, heads will roll." He scared us so much that we went to the other side of the house, up the back stairs, gathered our things, tiptoed down and loaded up the car, put the gear shift in neutral, without starting it, and pushed the car silently out of the driveway, leaving under the cloak of darkness and silence so as to escape the father's mighty wrath. It's not hard to picture God, the Creator who chastised us last week in the second chapter of Jeremiah, as a giant, barrel-chested, cranky father shouting, "When I come down there, heads will roll." And for that angry God, we will work hard and we will sacrifice to make God happy. We will behave or else. And yet, the story of Bethlehem tells us how the world received God's own self, Jesus the Christ, as a helpless, vulnerable, newborn baby. He came not to be the awesome, conquering Messiah that we expected, but to be the Lamb, to submit, to love his enemies. Christ banished the "you better behave or else" expectation. He turned the power dynamic on its head. The weak shall conquer. Grace and mercy shall rule the day. He calls us to that second mountain. In his letter to Philemon, the Apostle Paul, as a follower of Christ, is embracing this new world order. He is proposing the outrageous idea that Onesimus, the slave, be treated as a brother. Gone is life as we've known it, using up every single resource at our disposal. Paul is inviting Philemon to a new way of living where you give away something, a position of power, the need to be right. You give away your time or some of your worldly goods, all as a response to the love of Christ. And in that giving comes the joy. That's an upside-down way of thinking. Society teaches us that when we get things, we get joy. Christ says just the opposite. It's only when we give ourselves away that we can live fully. If you're thinking, "But I do give, I do what I'm told," hear this. There is no joy in reluctance or compulsion. Joy comes from commitment. The Apostle Paul understood that real joy comes from freely giving of self. He knows he can insist Philemon obey him, but he chooses instead to write, "But I prefer to do nothing without your consent, in order that your good deed might be voluntary and not something forced." After boldly asking Philemon to accept slave as brother, Paul goes one step further. Verse 18, "If Onesimus has wronged you in any way or owes you anything, charge it to my account." With these words, Paul shows he has embraced Onesimus fully. He is family. Paul makes Onesimus's debts Paul's own. That's real responsibility. When sacrifice for the other is a way of life. The early Christians were heavily persecuted, and it was only through this essential understanding of community, of mutual sacrifice and responsibility, that they were able to survive. Paul writes, "I am sending Onesimus," that is, my own heart, "back to you." That too is authentic relationship. When I am able to give so that you may become whole in some way, I experience a deep, abiding joy. Theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer says, giving defines relationship. Giving is the primary relationship between one person and another. David Brooks writes, individualism says the main activities of life are buying and selling. But you say no. The main activity of life is giving. Humans are at their best as givers. Brooks then broadens this truth. Community is woven through loved, drenched accountability. Community is woven through love, drenched accountability. In relationship, we belong to and are responsible for one another. Hey, preacher, I know where you're headed. What do you want from me? What does this church want from me? At a local non-denominational church, members submit their IRS tax forms to prove that they are giving the expected amount. They literally hand in their government forms to prove that they are donating what's required of them by their church. There is no joy in reluctance or compulsion. Joy comes from commitment. If you're a member of Beth Tikva Temple in Roswell, you receive an annual bill for your membership. That amount you pay is calculated according to your life circumstances. So if you're a single working person, you pay X. If you're a household with four dependents and two incomes, you pay Y. While I'm sure the theology of supporting the temple is taught along with sending out the annual statements, this is a very different way of doing things than how we do it at Pleasant Hill Presbyterian Church. There is no joy in reluctance or compulsion. Joy comes from commitment. You ask what the church wants from you? The church wants you to commit to joy. Let me show you a photo of joy that comes from commitment. When we call Bernie Kita to ask if he could please possibly consider finding time in his schedule to maybe think about going to the college kids with the college kids to Montreat in January, his response is, I'd love to. Bernie is the unofficial cook for all youth trips to Montreat. He preps homemade barbecue before the journey, brings cooler upon cooler of goodies, assigns kitchen duty to young people, and then commences with his ministry of cuisine and caring. Chandler Thurlow and Walter Kars can flip pancakes like professionals because of Bernie. Courtney Henry is practically a sous chef. And you haven't lived until you have seen the brilliance of Michael Armstrong on dish duty. Bernie's red apron holds some interesting messages. Courtney Henry's, I'm sorry you can't see it there, says, Bernie, thanks for everything you do for all of us at Montreat. Your teaching will live on forever. Duncan LeBlanc says, Bernie, you're the coolest dude ever to cook me a slider. I hope you never slide out of my life. Bernie coaches, cleans, cajoles, and cares. He gives of himself, his time, his talent, his treasure, and has built authentic relationship with some of the best folks at PHPC. Bernie knows the joy of commitment, and he has the signatures on that red apron to prove it. Every church member will receive a letter and pledge card in the mail this week. Read it carefully. Consider the joy that you find in committing to Christ through this church. And pray about how deeply you can give in 2020. And then respond in joy. Tell your leadership how big we can dream as we plan next year's ministry together. Know that in committing through a financial pledge, joy will come to you. How much joy? How much will you commit? I pray that, as Paul wrote, it will be even more than I say. Amen.